Hello, and welcome to episode 12 of Let Them Eat Cake. This episode, we spoke to James Griffin, a defense analyst and shitposting member of NAFO. We discuss the potential conflict with China, scenarios and how such an event may play out, and a variety of other defense-related topics. We have a back and forth on the capabilities of the major potential belligerents in a coming potential conflict, and expand a little on deeper context behind why conflicts are occurring. As always, we are 5th Gen, an information warfare cooperative that aims to shed light on things those in power want to be kept in the dark. We want to give a voice to the voiceless and give people the information they need to thrive in a world that tries so hard to starve you of it. I'm Jack, and my co-host is John, and we hope you enjoy the show.
We have a weapon more powerful than the British Empire, and that weapon is our refusal to bow to any order but our own, any institution but our own.
I am James Griffin. I'm a shitposter extraordinaire. You can find me on Twitter as at Spawn of Khan. I stole that nickname from a lecture on nuclear strategists, which pointed out that Herman Khan, despite being widely influential among people, never cultivated a school of thought, which I thought was absurd. So I went, all right, Spawn of Khan. A shitposter extraordinaire, war criminal in training, and defense analyst. Yeah, that sounds about fair.
Hey, just throwing in the defense analyst at the end there, because that's your lowest priority. When is China invading Taiwan?
I think I threw out a two-year timeline somewhere earlier this year. That was, I guess, very contingent. Right now, I'd say there's a much higher likelihood of invasion within the next 2 years for a variety of reasons. I guess the book that probably best summarizes why is Michael Beckley's Unrivaled, Why America Will Remain the Sole Superpower. I'm guessing he didn't choose the subtitle.
Yeah, a lot of times publishers will give you the subtitle.
Lays out pretty clearly why China's predicament, or strategic predicament, is substantially worse than basically most of the planet sort of recognizes, except for the Chinese Communist Party and like a handful of defense analysts in the U.S. Actually, I brought up a point. There was an event at the Center for New American Security in D.C. Where they had, I guess, this is a few years ago, they had a panel with Department of Treasury people, and they were just tossing around the idea of sanctions on China, but it didn't occur to them, I guess, and these are the people heading up their sanctions department, that China's economy is not very healthy for a number of reasons, principally demographic, as you probably might have noticed, or some people might have noticed. Their working age population, which is, I guess, the population of employees or people that actually support everybody else in China, is declining. Actually, it started declining like 2 or 3 years ago. Their economic indicators are just garbage. Their debt to GDP ratio is actually higher than the US's. They actually just completely stopped the process of privatizing large firms, right? So their, I guess, ability to innovate economically has been shot in the face.
Just to expand, the semiconductors also like going and like, didn't it take them like 10 years to make a ballpoint pen or something?
Not like a ballpoint pen, but their key sticking point is that they've struggled with miniaturizing semiconductors, right? The amount of transistors that you can fit on a single chip. I am not an engineer or computer scientist, but the way I understand it is that the number of transistors you can fit on a chip determines the amount of computational power that you can have. And they have just been sort of shitting the bed on producing it, even though they've thrown tens of billions of dollars into R&D at this SMIC, which is SMIC. It's the main Chinese state-owned industry that produces, I guess, China's tech, the bones for China's tech.
They steal people's tech and then develop it for China.
Yes, actually, that's ironically something of a mixed picture, right? Because for the past 20 years, they've been famous for that. But for, I guess, before Xi, I guess, probably under Hu Jintao. They tried to prioritize domestic R&D, but they've just been very bad at it for a number of reasons. I don't want to say it's not like a capacity thing, right? We know that China has plenty of smart people, right? But their school systems just don't lend themselves to out-of-the-box thinking, right? I don't want to say that the U.S. is due, but we can remedy that by importing talent from around the world, right? We're not limited by our own population. We can pick whoever we want from the best 7 billion people in the world to do research, to help us manufacture better things, because people want to come to the U.S. and the West in general to live, right? Because we're pretty relaxed.
We probably take a lot of China's talent there too.
Yeah, a lot.
And there's huge brain drain relaxed. Coming out of China at the moment. Like brain drain.
That's like a consequence of their COVID policies, the crackdown on Hong Kong. Sort of, actually, this is a fun fact that a lot of people don't sort of recognize. There's the perception of China as being like this communist state, right? But the Chinese parliament or the Chinese
Communist Party. Parliament.
It's assembly. It's something assembly, right?
The People's Assembly, probably, because it's like always that. About the people in communism.
They actually have more billionaires in their, I guess, political ranks than the U.S. does, right? That's just weird things that you don't expect for a
communist. Interesting fact.
Well, I think that makes sense, because the last thing you would want to do as a billionaire, you would think, is get into politics, you know?
Yeah.
Because, look at Trump. He's getting all these litigations and all that stuff. It's like the last thing you want to do as a billionaire is have people start pouring over all your records and things like that.
Or being a major hitter in their political system is almost a prerequisite to being a billionaire, right? Because if you have political ties to the party, you can set up a company, or if you probably own a company, you can get favorable contracts for them. The Chinese Treasury will throw money at them to make sure that they stand up, even if they're losing money. They're not profitable. Actually, I think it's like 60%+ of their state-owned firms are barely eking out a profit. The only higher-end ones are like their software companies, like Tencent, right? Because people like Fortnite and TikTok.
It's League of Legends.
And League of Legends.
So if we're looking at an invasion scenario, I guess just because it's a nuclear power, it's got to be more serious?
This is actually one that we know that nuclear strategy is a thing, right? People know that nuclear strategy is a thing that somebody studies somewhere. There are people who study what targets you hit in a nuclear war, etc. But there aren't currently like a lot of nuclear strategists, because that used to be like its own dedicated field where you get like a bunch of federal contracts to just talk about the worst shit anybody's ever done or will do, right? Get paid a bunch of money. That's how the major think tanks came about, like RAND Corporation. They just started out telling the US government how to do nuclear war stuff. That crop of people died, like actually the last major ones died off just a few years ago, like Thomas Schelling.
Egypt had two complete armies on the Israeli side of the Suez Canal in an area where there weren't any civilians within 40 or 50 miles. There must have been a decision not to. Nobody would have noticed perfect targets for tactical weapons without raising the issue. I can easily believe that she thought, one of these years or one of these decades, one of my hostile neighbors is going to acquire nuclear weapons, and we shouldn't be the ones who deflate the taboo. And it may be that Iran can't help but notice that nuclear weapons haven't proved usable. They also haven't been terribly good at deterrence. They didn't deter North Korea. They didn't deter China. They didn't deter Argentina. That battle was entirely a sea battle, and nuclear weapons are particularly good at sea, where there are no civilians within tens of miles. Nuclear weapons didn't deter Egypt or Syria in 1973.
You might have heard of arms and influence, right? Or like Herman Kahn, etc. There's not a lot of nuclear strategists, like alive right now. So when China, have you guys heard of China's ICBM, or actually, do you guys know anything about the People's Liberation Army Rocket Force?
I've seen some of their rocket failures and stuff like that. Like, there's always a meme coming out of China where they're using toxic gas as fuel.
And like how if you look at like a Chinese rare earth mining site, it just looks like Mordor. Like, honest to God.
Have you seen how they go in, they'll spray paint everything green, even rocks? You go in there and you go to the mining site, and it looks like Mordor, but like with a green coat of paint on there.
the recent developments in their nuclear arsenal have very much complicated things. This is something that, I guess because all the nuclear strategies sort of died off, we haven't really talked about. The Chinese nuclear arsenal, starting probably within the last 2 years, has sprinted from being substantially weaker than the U.S. Technically, we wouldn't have had to worry really about nuclear exchange with China, even if they had decided to panic and launch nuclear weapons at the U.S. Our very, very bad missile defense system would have intercepted most of them. They were launching like 50-ish warheads, and the interceptors that we have, the U.S. has like about 80, so like a good portion of those would have been intercepted before they hit U.S. cities.
So also have the Navy out there too, though.
Oh, that's sort of, technically the Navy is capable of engaging.
If we got into a scenario where nukes were coming, I don't think they would just be out of the blue, you know?
No, the nuclear submarines are the first strike. That's why they're there. That's their entire purpose, is first strike.
So how capable are they to do multiple launches from a nuclear sub?
Well, I'm pretty sure they have around 12 nuclear missiles per submarine, and they have multiple submarines in multiple locations around the world. So I'm almost certain, I might be off with the numbers, but it's about that. They are very, very, very capable, and these missiles are wild.
I wouldn't necessarily...
He's about to shit all over you, dude.
He's right that SLBMs, right? Submarine Launched Ballistic Missiles and boomers, right? Word for nuclear subs, they're dangerous, but it's very iffy. Whenever you talk to like U.S. Navy people or submariners publicly facing, they'll be like, yes, Russian subs are very dangerous. As one submariner pointed out, most of China's subs are based off of Russian model. They are very stealthy, or fairly stealthy, but if you talk to like ASW people, they'll sort of just throw you a sly smirk and be like, yeah, they're very stealthy. All right. Oh, we should be very afraid of China's submarine arsenal. DoD publishes like a lot of things, like a ridiculous amount of information about everything. They have officers in each branch who are all terminally online. They leak like a sieve, but their submariners and their ASW people, right? Their anti-submarine warfare people, they are very, very secretive. Way more than any other branch, which is a bit weird.
I feel like the whole submariner thing, the reason that they're so secluded, because I've had a few friends in submarines, and they're very sort of hush-hush about it because they tend to work with special forces.
You know what's super cool about that is that they literally have them, like, they'll put them inside a torpedo tube and shoot special forces out of torpedo tubes. Like, that's like the coolest shit.
They get to do a lot of fun shit.
With the nuclear submarines, I imagine that all of their operations are very highly classified.
Yeah,
as opposed to other branches where stuff isn't as classified, or there's not as many classified things that they have to keep under wraps.
Even the special operators are more talkative than submariners, which is wild, right?
SEAL teams love to brag.
The SEAL teams are super problematic for a number of reasons.
They'll tell you about all the stuff. Like, it's like, that's a war crime, dude. You probably shouldn't say that out loud. One of my favorite things is, like, they'll have, like, SEAL team guys on, like, the news. Like, if you go look up, like, how we killed Bin Laden, right, they'll be like, we disguised him because his job's important. The guy just has the worst beard on.
It's just like...
And that's, like, how I imagine the CIA...
The CIA's guys are almost uniformly relatively or very smart, right? Their analysts are usually excellent, but they don't actually generate like a lot of analysts, so they don't analyze enough things. That's the old stereotype of an academic who can win a bar fight.
You know, we have standards. Even to get out of like infantry, you have to pass an exam.
Because they're just not very perceptive of how shitty people think. That's why they get surprised all the time. We tend to have like this perception, a popular perception of the CIA as being these...
Well, I mean, look at the Iran protests. That's who's causing all of it, right?
Oh, no, definitely not.
The CIA... Yeah, I know. What...
After the CIA fucked up killing Castro...
The amount of times. The amount of times.
So many times. One time, Cuban intelligence, they took cameras and videos of CIA agents who were spying on Castro. And they turned it into a four-part series. And you can actually find it on YouTube of Cuban intelligence spying on, you know, CIA spies. They're just bad at it. The only like part of intelligence that the U.S. is phenomenal in since like the early 1900s has been electronic communications, studying the things that people type into their devices, right? The NSA.
This is actually CIA a firm belief of me is that the CIA should just be spun off into the NSA.
I don't know about that necessarily, because we need the CIA to be able to do like CIA things, right?
Illegal things, yeah.
It's murky, right? Because technically, anything that the CIA does can be considered legal, depending on how they interpret the law. We want them to be doing things that are good for not only other countries and other countries, not necessarily countries, but the people in those countries, right? You wouldn't want them like supporting the Eritrean military because that would be good for the Eritrean government. The Eritrean government's run by a dictatorship. What the fuck would that be about? You want them to be doing things that are not objectively good, but good from the perspective of the people living in other countries, right?
But what if they have oil?
Oh, actually, this is a bugaboo that sort of came up like a lot, right? One time I spoke with, I won't say who it was, an assistant secretary of defense, a deputy secretary of defense, or undersecretary of defense. There's a lot of titles for people in the federal government. All of them are basically meaningless because there's no like rigid hierarchy across it. It's just they are in a position of power, right? They were one of Dick Cheney or Donald Rumsfeld's main people at that time. Their entire idea behind invading Iraq, actually, they didn't really have an idea. They sort of just winged it. But when Cheney made that stupid ass statement about we're going to secure their oil fields, right? Their actual intent was to actually, you know how Saddam Hussein's Iraqi government was very shitty?
Yeah, they killed 1 million people in the years between the Gulf Wars.
Yes, hundreds of thousands of Kurds, like a million Iranians, hundreds of thousands of Iraqis. Iraqi Kurds are Iraqis, but if you ask them...
We've covered them a lot. We just actually... Yeah. Our last show is with the YPJ.
Oh, duh. Oh, damn, I got to watch it. He meant to use the state-run oil infrastructure, right? This government-owned oil apparatus to pay for reconstructing Iraq, right? Mm-hmm. So not only would that have been meant or entailed, actually, technically it's doing it right now. It would have been going towards A, reconstructing Iraq from all of the damage that we and Saddam did. It would also mean, I guess, stipends from oil revenue to Iraqi citizens, right? He meant that saying, yes, we're going to... He literally was trying to do socialism for Iraq. If you...
People will lose their minds if you say that about Dick Cheney.
It's mind-boggling, right? Because it's completely
and then Trump gave Kirkuk to Iran.
Oh yeah, that was scary.
So anyway, let's get back on topic to Taiwan. So yes, go ahead, Taiwan. Jack.
The federal opposition has welcomed reports that American nuclear-capable long-range bombers are set to be stationed in the Northern Territory. The aim is to increase pressure on China to discourage any military adventures, especially over Taiwan. But peace activists say it will increase the risk of Australia itself becoming a nuclear target.
It is consistent with a reframing of US interests more than a decade in the making.
As I made clear in Australia, we will be strengthening our presence in the Asia Pacific.
China's increasingly aggressive stance towards Taiwan is speeding the search for countermeasures.
In the event of an invasion, do you think that the general public would accept the heavy losses that are likely to occur and do you think that the world will recognize the Communist Party's claim over Taiwan despite never actually having a claim over it?
Those are actually fairly nuanced questions, right? The U.S.'s end...
Because they have to succeed in the invasion first.
Yeah, for the second question. Because if they do that, most of the world's probably going to be like, okay, sure, fine, we actually like money, so even if you do murder a bunch of Taiwanese people, we're going to look the other way and continue doing trade with you. Because
Uyghur genocide.
Yeah, fucking right now. And we should actually really be looking into supporting the Uyghur independence movements that are really trying to get assistance from the U.S. government. But the U.S. government...
And this is the thing, to tie back into our tangent, though, when we don't support people, they go to Al-Qaeda.
Yeah, well, this is...
That is true.
This is the most heartbreaking thing, right? There are actually two main Uyghur independence movements, right? One of them is based in Europe. It's relatively small. The one in the U.S., right? They're trying to do their best to push China out of, I'm going to say East Turkestan, not Xinjiang, language priority to the people who aren't being dicks. They're trying to push China, or at least garner autonomy for East Turkestan, without recourse to jihadist violence, right? Because there are, in fact, Uyghur jihadists. There are not a lot of them. There's like a handful of them. They wreaked havoc in China, a mixture of China and East Turkestan in the early 2000s, and then they fucked off to Afghanistan.
Actually,
this is complicated, right? Because China is actually most likely exporting Uyghurs from broader Turkestan to Syria so they can die there instead of dying fighting China.
That would make sense.
I guess it's literally a multi-trillion dollar question, right? The popular answer would probably be, we don't know. The risky analyst answer would probably be, probably not, right? So China, I guess, in the Chinese government intentionally has been avoiding foreign expeditions, right? Like the plague. Currently, they only have a few tens of thousands of PLA soldiers working with the Peace Corps around the world, right? When a few hundred of them were... Oh, shit. I can't remember where precisely.
It's more on the social element of it, because obviously there are going to be... Theoretically, the Taiwan's defenses are theoretically strong enough to withstand at least, like, kind of almost, right?
It's...
I've been told as if China basically reaches land, it's over.
Yeah, basically. And in all likelihood, they would reach land. They would have to defeat the Taiwanese army in the field. I don't want to say they would have to annihilate them, right? Because there's no guarantee that the Taiwanese army would fight to the end, because there's no guarantee that they would have popular support, right? The consensus from military analysts in the U.S. and the West, who study and actually visit and talk to people from Taiwan, is that the Taiwanese people like democracy. They like independence and freedom.
They just like being alive more.
Exactly, yes. And I 100% can't blame them, right? South Korea has the exact same sentiment, right?
Well, it's funny, because if you go to South Koreans, they forget North Korea exists.
Yeah, exactly, right?
it's so far off in their mind.
North Korea is a fly to be swatted away. The PLA, would South Korea be willing to fight it? Probably not, on its own at least. If with U.S. support, yes, South Korea.
Well, so as far as Taiwan and the invasion goes, I mean, we send them weapons all the time. So, I mean, I guess my question is, why bother?
Oh, that's a very, deep question. And the simple answer, and it's really unavoidable if you view it from every lens that matters, is that we have to defend Taiwan, right? We don't really have a choice in the matter.
And that's what Biden said, and they tried to retract it, you know, which I think they shouldn't have done. I know they retracted it just to appease China, but that was such a ballsy move for him to be like, yes.
He said it like three times, right? He said, we're going to defend Taiwan. And then the White House is like, no, no, he didn't say that. Sorry, China, we're not antagonizing you. It's fine.
Yeah, and even the reporter was like, so you're saying like U.S. forces in war with China? Yes.
And it was such a wimp move. Right, it was limp dick.
It's cowardly to bow out to China. You know, it's just like John Cena doing his apology because he accidentally mentioned Taiwan.
It's I don't want to say not befitting. It's just fucking. I don't want to say un-American. It's just fucking lame.
I would say it's un-American. To retract something to be like, no, we're going to appease another country. No.
We're the dick-swinging guy who always doesn't always get what he wants, but he doesn't give a shit what anybody else thinks, right? That's our entire
That's why people voted for Trump, right? Because he said, listen, motherfucker,
in that speech. He was speaking to the American people at their core. He was a fucking idiot, but like he was speaking to like the core values of America. We don't give a shit, right? We'll
give Kirkuk to Iran if we want. Fuck it, because we don't understand what it means.
Exactly.
Why do we have to defend it though?
Okay, I said the simple reason is we don't have a choice. The long answer is that economically speaking, we have to defend Taiwan no matter what.
I mean, it's not like we'll defend them until Armageddon.
Okay, I'm going to play the politician here and say we will defend Taiwan until Armageddon. Speaking strategically, there's no morals and strategy. You can tell a certain point when the person thinking strategically is going to throw you under the bus. But speaking morally, which is probably which we should abide by because it's what we're good at, we have to defend Taiwan no matter what. Economically speaking, we don't really have a choice, right? If Taiwan falls to the Chinese Communist Party, our economy is going to tank. Not just our economy in the US, Australia's economy, Japan's economy, South Korea's economy, all of Europe's economy, South America, the entire continent, and Africa. Their economies are going to be fine because they're not like hyper dependent upon modern technology. Yeah. Anywhere that you like.
You want to tie this back into the semiconductors that we opened with?
Yes, exactly. Without high-quality, modern semiconductors, none of the shit that we use will be able to be, not replicated. We won't be able to produce it at scale, right? Our economies are fucked, right? And this is just across the board. Hospitals will have a harder time doing everything, right? From keeping track of patients to using surgical robotics, right? You're going to have to go back to using a scalpel and a fucking torch.
Sounds like the fall of the Roman Empire now.
It's like the fall of the Roman Empire, except more embarrassing, because we invented modern semiconductors and now we're fucking way behind.
Yeah, it's likely that the machines would be destroyed in an invasion, no? And realistically, how many in the world are there and how many are in Taiwan?
I think Taiwan is 40% of the market. Is it six? It's 60 or more? I think
60% of high-end semiconductors in general. I think it's more than 60, actually.
We're talking high-end, though. So the stat I looked at probably included, like, low-end as well.
These are the 4-nanometer ones, right? These are like really, really small ones that are used in like military equipment.
Modern military equipment, like next gen, like the F-35. Yes. Not like the Russians can get away with like Russian military technology is using like shit out of the 1980s, right? Not because they're not capable of producing high quality material.
They just don't feel like it.
They can't afford it, right? They can't afford to produce
If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
It's always been broke.
Yeah. Yeah, basically. And it's If you, it's broke, it doesn't matter if you have enough of it.
Going into World War III, people think that it's going to be NATO versus the CSTO. So let's talk about what it would actually look like.
It's would probably look more like opportunism than like a concerted traditional alliance.
Well, yeah, I think you have a great point, because I personally think that China and Russia aren't allies. It's just an opportunity.
They're not
for China,
right? This is something that you'll hear from Russian analysts, geopolitical and military, and Chinese analysts from China and Russia and everywhere else. It feels like Russia and China are allies. In practice, they hate each other more than they hate us. Technically, Russia and China have gone to war more times than either the U.S. and China.
I mean, technically, they're still at war. Don't they have a territorial dispute where they're like, they're always switching flags on each other? Like, someone will take a island over, and they're always getting pissed at each other.
That's Japan.
Oh, no, no, no. Everyone does this. Turkey does it. They all switch the flags up.
Anybody who has a border dispute, which is basically everybody, I don't think.
Australia doesn't.
Tell that to the Aboriginals.
the Aboriginals, your Kiwi neighbors.
So the CSTO, we already talked about, you mentioned Azerbaijan, Armenia, and then there was a breakdown with Tajikistan and Kyrgyzstan. And then, but in the beginning of this, they sent troops to Kazakhstan for the protests, and everyone was kind of like being like, oh, maybe the CSTO kind of still does exist. And then, both these countries started killing each other, and then it was kind of up in the air again.
The thing in Kazakhstan is equal parts hilarious and terrible, right?
And where is it happening? Because everyone thinks that World War III is going down. Where's it happening?
It'll probably be.
It's because we bombed Qasem Soleimani, I heard.
Man, the Iranians don't want war with the U.S. They are. People are probably going to be mad that I laughed about Iran doing bad things, but like, they are like professional hood rats, right? They're not.
And we talked about this on our Ukraine episode. It's like, we literally have gangsters enlisting, you know, like Iran who like their candidacy for their military. I think they use a great strategy for the resources that they have, using the IRGC to spread themselves out as much as possible and be a force multiplier. I think that's an amazing strategy for Iran, but it's not something that you could do a direct war with. You know, there's no army for Iran, and they don't even have an air force, really, if you think about it.
They have Tomcats. That's all that you need.
Hey, Tom Cruise could fly.
So Iran's out. They're probably not going to be in World War III. They may economically support that type of thing. So
they profit from it, but like, they're not going to start shit.
So NATO and the EU.
That one's also questionable, right?
They won't be involved in World War III.
So. The Brits and French, the British are probably going to throw in with whatever they can, right? The British military is sort of a shell of its former self. Their navy, it's improving gradually, right? With the onboarding of more carriers and just in general, training and building itself to conduct expeditionary operations, right? And the French are going to throw in. Just because it's
They're busy killing Africans.
Oh no, that's what Operation Barkhane just ended.
Okay.
It was a whole separate thing, right? Barkhane ended, right? Like a few days ago, and nobody else except for the French noticed it. And maybe host countries. They made a whole announcement thing. Macron made a whole statement. 4,000 likes. The official operation got 2 likes. One of them was me. And the French military posted something that got like 200 likes, right? Nobody, imagine like saying this is the end of a war for France in a region with 100 million people, right? That it's affecting the lives of 100 million people and a good share of the global economy, and nobody notices. I mean, that feels kind of bad, right? It's embarrassing on everybody's part.
It's because France suck at everything. Everybody already knows this.
And Germany doesn't even have an army. They can't even have a working tank. They have to borrow our shit. So they're out of World War III, I guess, too.
The German military really, really wants to do like modern war shit, right? But the German government keeps them on a very tight leash.
Yeah,
right?
Well, apparently Ukraine lit a fire under them.
Mm. But even the German government has had to have been dragged kicking and screaming the entire way when it comes to supplying Ukraine. The German government and defense
industry, they don't have anything to supply. They don't have working tanks.
Like Rheinmetall has been like repeatedly said, hey, we have a few hundred Leopards and Pumas that we can send to Ukraine, right? And they've told the German government this, say, hey, just send the word. We'll send them free of charge, even. We don't give a shit. You guys aren't using them. We'll just make more. The German government's been vetoing them repeatedly. It's fucking embarrassing.
Well, Poland, they in?
If it entails war with Russia, then yes.
who else would be in World War III?
It depends, right?
Finland.
It depends.
Well, I just
Finland,
think if we have Poland
Finland has
will
a
win.
Massive tactical advantage. They would have, but that would also mean NATO. So,
well, the thing is, what people need to understand in Article 5 is that it's not mandatory to honor it. It says you should or something. It's like maybe you'll do it, right? It says something. It's
more
wording
of a suggestion,
weird. Right? Yes.
Even if the governments view that as legally obligating, I mean, you're obligated to help, but like you said.
Meanwhile,
like
the CSTO, it says you have to do it.
The entire CSTO was like, nah, we're good. But the problem with the Russia part is like, Russia's probably not going to be invading NATO anytime soon, right? They like to talk a bunch of shit, but they are fully conscious.
They've shown that they can't, so.
Technically, they could have.
But
right?
You know, everyone is so scared that Russia's going to drop a nuke and World War III is going to break out and the world's going to be obliterated. Where is this happening?
A thing that we started to touch upon earlier. If anything, it's probably more likely that there's going to be an accidental nuclear exchange between the US and China.
The relevant US behaviors have increased regional tensions, seriously undermined regional peace and stability, and may trigger an arms race in the region. China urges the parties concerned to abandon the outdated Cold War and zero-sum mentality and narrow-minded geopolitical thinking, and do something conducive to regional peace and enhance mutual trust between countries.
Ironically, long-range bombers are a capability that the Chinese armed forces have already, so I'm not sure where the arms race is occurring here.
Most people don't think of China as being a nuclear power, right? That's just not something that...
I sure as hell do. I don't forget it.
even 5 years ago, China's nuclear arsenal was sort of a non-entity, right? They were incapable of, in the event of a conflict, they were incapable of delivering enough nuclear weapons to the U.S. and its allies in the region to most likely deter American intervention wherever we wanted, right?
North Korea is just going to obliterate the peninsula if it happens. They've been honest about that. You know, they're not going for Japan or anything like that. They're just killing all Koreans. So.
Even the North Koreans tried.
He literally said it. He said, I will not allow war to come again to the Korean Peninsula, and that's why I have nuclear weapons.
It's funny. There's a secret scroll stuff, right? DOD is fully confident, mostly confident now, not fully confident anymore, that they could annihilate North Korea's nuclear arsenal if it even looks like he's thinking of doing it. Right?
I wouldn't be surprised, honestly. He probably has, like, one.
He's like,
maybe five.
Well,
right?
The thing is, the way North Korea's economy works is they test missiles, make threats, and then people pay them to stop, and then they sustain themselves.
It's, I'm sorry for any North Korean expats who see this, but your entire economic model is built around pointing a gun at your heads, at North Korea's head, and the head of all of North Korea's other citizens, and a blank at South Korea saying, if you don't give us food, we'll shoot.
And it's the Joker.
Basically, yeah. And other countries are sort of like, okay, well, North Korea, a war with South Korea would be ugly. We'd beat your face into a pulp, but I mean, we can just give you food. We don't.
So it's like you give them stuff. You give them money to go away. It's like we're gonna give you $100 to fuck off.
Yeah. Basically.
So you would think that a World War III scenario would be far more likely with China than Russia.
Absolutely. I mean, kinetically, any World War III like scenario is mostly going to be confined currently to China's near abroad. They don't have enough foreign military bases or bases in foreign countries to put up much of a fight.
Then how is it a World War III? It's gotta have the world.
It would mostly involve the entire world beating on China. Not the entire world.
I mean, we talked about this in DMs where I said that World War III is impossible because we're in the fifth generation of warfare. And you're like, I don't like those terms. I don't like fourth and fifth gen. And I said, no, it can't happen because you cannot have a global war with a nuclear arsenal and fifth generation equipment. Like, I don't think that a global war is actually possible in a scenario where you would call it World War III.
I think if we were to remove all of the dinosaurs in politics, then yes, you are correct. But right now we have people who are 80 years old who think in World War II terms, who think
and
that pressing
you have
a
people
bigger
like
button...
Dianne Feinstein who doesn't think at all.
Right, and you've got these people who think, ooh, I have big stick, don't do unless I fucking say, right? Putin's just like, ha, I have big stick, don't attack.
If Russia's not involved with China in this conflict, we're looking at basically just the Asian powers. So Japan, Korea, Australia, what do they call it? The Quad?
Oh, yeah, the Quad. Mm.
So it's not really World War III, but it's a war between two great powers.
Yes.
Who both have nuclear weapons.
Who both have nuclear weapons, who are both massively relevant for the global economy. Most of the world probably isn't going to give a shit because, I don't know. Well, I take that back. Most of the world's probably going to watch a war between the U.S. and China like they would a soccer game. In the case of a U.S.-China war, it'd be like a lot more complicated, right? Because, well, I should say everything that happens would be highly contingent upon what China chooses to do, right? The U.S.'s decisions are sort of set in stone.
We have an escalation ladder.
Yeah, we sort of not formally established them, but it's generally recognized that if they invade Taiwan, we're going to respond and try and destroy whatever ships that they have sorting out. And we're going to repel any invasion force that tries to land at Taiwan. But China's options are a lot more open, right? If they try to blockade Taiwan, what might the U.S. do? Are we going to probably try and shoot down or sink every PLA ship and, I guess, strangle PLA or trade out of China?
Yeah, sanctions. Like, what else can you do with blockades? So how likely is a doom scenario nowadays?
A doom scenario is really not possible, right? Because that's sort of...
I told you all that it can't.
I don't want to say it's not possible for, like... I just guess physically it's not possible because the U.S. and China's nuclear arsenals, and Russia's for that matter, simply aren't large enough.
So we need more nukes. Okay.
I don't want to say we need more nukes.
Let's get on it.
Bigger nukes.
We probably do need bigger nukes relative to the target sets, right? Nuclear strategy is fun, right? Because it's hyper complex.
And the one thing I convinced myself of after all these years of exposure to the use of nuclear weapons is that they were useless. They could not be used. So you can have deterrence with an even lower number of weapons. Well, then why stop there? Why not continue on? Why not get rid of them altogether?
There's a perception from military guys who do conventional war stuff that nukes are useless because we can't use them without crippling everything, right? But in practice, it's complicated, right? Because nukes are kind of not very powerful. They're kind of
smaller
shit.
Nukes.
Yeah, people kind of overestimate
handheld grenade
like,
nukes.
Like how big was the like mother of all bombs like compared to like the bombs dropped on Japan?
That's actually, I'm gonna pull up a quick calculator here because you have to use effective megatonnage. Hiroshima and Nagasaki bombs are like 15 and 20. Kilotons. The Tsar Bomba that the Soviets actually exploded was 50 megatons.
The Moab is 11 tons of TNT equivalent. So it says yes. Hiroshima had 16 kilotons. So it's way smaller.
It still takes a lot of explosive material to make one of those bombs, though.
The gap
between a low-yield nuke and a conventional bomb, it doesn't seem that large to me.
Get this. The Moab, which contains over 8,000 pounds of an Australian explosive called H6.
You know
Australia
who,
makes the
you
Moab.
You know who helped us drop that shit?
Probably the Australians?
No, the Taliban.
Love it.
The Taliban gave us the coordinates to drop that shit on ISIS. That shit wouldn't have been dropped without the Taliban's help.
I think my all-time favorite highlight from, well, I don't want to say highlight because people died and that's sad, but it's also incredibly funny that there's a bunch of them fighting between the Taliban and the Islamic State Khorasan province in eastern Afghanistan or northeastern Afghanistan. They were having these skirmishes that the news was covering, right? And the U.S. bombed both of them at the same time.
Let's scare some people to wrap this up. What do people have to fear? What should the news be fear-mongering right now that they're not? Instead, they're talking about Putin maybe dropping a bomb on Kiev.
Everybody should be shitting bricks about whatever Sirajuddin Haqqani is doing next in Afghanistan. Sirajuddin Haqqani, the current head of the Haqqani Network, is the most powerful man in Afghanistan.
I'd say he's the most powerful crime lord in the world.
He's hands down the most powerful crime lord in the world, and arguably one of the top like five most powerful people in the world, because he has the resources of an entire country and none of the limitations of a government. Because if you do stupid shit as a dictator in like Eritrea, somebody's going to want to kill you to take your place, right? If Putin does too much stupid shit, people are going to kill him.
I'm waiting any day now. It's coming. I mean, the warning signs are there that, like, it could happen.
Exactly, right? They're bound by the systems that are around them. Sirajuddin doesn't really seem to have those same bounds. The only bindings that he really has are whatever are on his mind, which is less than ideal.
Yeah, that's kind of how I describe him, is that he works in his best interest, and that's one of the reasons why he still is an asset to the CIA. Like, I firmly believe he gave us Al-Qaeda's leader.
There's a high likelihood that he gave us Al-Qaeda's leader.
Yeah. So, I mean, it sounds like a great guy to me.
The problem is, right, his dad was the guy who pushed Al-Qaeda into launching direct attacks against the U.S. in the first place, right? He genuinely believes in, I guess, global jihad, right? The I don't want to say a global khilafah, but he actually is this sort of textbook example of...
He's like Castro we don't know about.
He's worse than Castro, right? Because Castro,
but you know, because he's dodged so many assassination attempts.
It's almost worse. It's definitely worse than Castro, right? Because when the CIA was trying to kill Castro, the CIA was fucking stupid as shit. This is the smart CIA trying to kill someone, right? And still getting absolutely bombed.
Yeah, getting their airstrip bombed.
Yes, exactly.
That we covered that on the last episode, is the bombing of the CIA and how their response, they dropped two bombs that were supposed to be on him, but it killed high level Al-Qaeda guys, but it also killed a bunch of kids.
He's
still mad about that one.
Oh, he's definitely 100% still pissed at the US. We've killed, I think, two of his brothers, at least. One brother was killed filming propaganda. Well, actually, Okay, if you see this Taliban affiliate, don't send this to him so he won't get mad and send a car bomb to my house. Because he's definitely capable of doing that sort of thing. And this is why everybody should be afraid, or at least concerned about what he'll do.
I mean, how capable would he be of doing, like, mass-scale attacks?
Extremely capable.
Was the withdrawal from Afghanistan a mistake?
Yes, absolutely.
I think we needed to get out of there. I think we need to start fresh. We need to go back to the drawing board with it, you know?
And this is a complicated one, right? Because we sort of foreclosed the ability to invade Afghanistan in the future while propelling one of the most dangerous men in the world to the position of highest power in the country.
The CIA literally built him, though. Like, if it wasn't for the CIA and his dad, like, when we talk about the Contras, like, we know the CIA will partner with drug dealers to help fund resistance armies. It's just what you have to do, you know?
Yes.
And that's what happened with Haqqani's dad, and it built the empire. And when the Taliban rose, they got to a point where Haqqani could either fight them, and he could have. He really could have. But all the Taliban had to do is say that, okay, we won't outlaw growing opium. And he was like, fuck it, I'm in, let's go.
It's not just growing opium. They just sort of said, hey, if you don't fight us, we'll let you do your own thing. And he was like, all right, whatever, I'm fine.
And that's kind of still continued to this day because they think that he's Taliban, but I never considered him a Taliban.
Even the Haqqani say they're part of the Taliban, but then they throw you a look like this.
Mm-hmm. I was telling him that the interior is fucking paranoid as shit that Western spies are closing in on him right now. And everybody's getting in this dragnet that's getting swept up, so.
Which is ironic, right? Because, I mean, CIA is probably trying to. They're probably fucking it up because it's CIA. CIA is no good at human intelligence. I mean, every time... Yeah, that's the thing. I think the Jacks had the right response there. We like to think of the CIA as being this intelligence engine that just churns out knowledge.
Well,
that the U.S.
government has. I say it's a joke I have. It's how to run a dictatorship 101. Everything, just blame on America and say it's the CIA. And we allow that because it makes us seem more powerful anyway.
Even though like 90% of the time, whenever CIA gets intelligence from human, it's because somebody wanted to talk and just wanted money, all right? It's not like them going out of their way to generate intelligence. It's just people saying, hey, wherever I live kind of fucking sucks. Can I go to the US, move there, maybe get some money? And CIA is just like, yeah, sure. But can you tell them that we turned you?
You'd say it's he's a greater thing, greater threat to the world than Xi Jinping?
Yes, Siraj, definitely, yes. Because Xi, for all of his power, is limited by not only other party officials, how much he's willing to risk getting like lynched by a mob of people. Siraj doesn't have those fears, right? He stood in front of a room of the family members of suicide bombers and gave a speech, and nothing happened. Imagine telling like 1,000 people, or speaking in front of like 1,000 people whose family members you sent off to die in explosions, right?
And well, he excused it saying, hey, I had people who died too.
Yeah.
He brought up that double tap specifically in that speech. Great speech. I put it in a lot of videos, actually. He's very convincing when he's pretty, let go of your hate and malice. Mm-hmm. Very ironic thing for him to say.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And because, like you said, he's very eloquent, right?
Oh, yeah. He's shy, though, it seems.
Yes, definitely shy.
I was debating with Pakistanis because they were saying, no, he's not looking her in the eyes because he respects women. And I'm like, no, I think he's just shy, dude.
He's just shy.
He's in the interview and he just doesn't know.
Like if you see him like interviewing other people, he'll turn towards the camera and giggle a bit. It's like the just classic little shy guy behavior. But like also, it's weird, right? Because he's like a coy Japanese teen mixed with
an unrelenting force of just brutality.
Yes, that's a good way of putting it.
Where should our attention be on what is the actual threat and how should we counter it?
That one's complicated, right? Because we can't just outright kill him. Because A, there's a lot of Americans and a lot of Westerners in general still in Afghanistan, right? So if we kill him, they're just going to kill a bunch of Americans and then we'll be embarrassed and we'll have to not even sure what we can do. Bomb more things. That's just not going to do anything except cause a conflict spiral. Well, which we
what
can't
happens
control.
If ISIS kills him?
If ISIS kills him, their efficiency is going to drop off a cliff. The Taliban's efficiency, right?
Sounds like a solution to me. Just get ISIS to do it.
That's sort of complicated, right? Would you rather have a well-run country, or not well, but well by Taliban standards, or well by jihadist standards, run country with a wildly threatening panoply of terrorist groups at its disposal? Or would you rather have a poorly run country run by a bunch of brutal maniacs? It's like, I don't know, would you rather be dealing with Iran or ISIS?
Iran.
Yeah.
When I'm saying get ISIS to do it, I'm just saying pretend to be ISIS and do it.
We could do that, but like even then, the Taliban aren't, well, I should say the larger half of the Taliban, larger half, that's an oxymoron.
The ones that aren't the Haqqani network.
Yeah, the ones that aren't the Haqqani network. Not to be mean, but they're not great at governance, right? It's not their strong suit.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's not what they were doing for 20 years.
Yeah, they were doing just gang shit, basically, right?
They are. I consider the Taliban a gang. I mean, they sell drugs.
Yeah. Like, the normal Taliban are like a less professional mafia. The Haqqanis are like, they're like the Russian mob on steroids.
They're the guys that poisoned Navalny.
Yes. No. Yes.
Yeah. They're like on that level where it's like you'll die in an airport. You won't know what happened to you.
Exactly. Or like they'll kill you and they'll make it look like somebody else did it. and like nobody's going to be able to see through it because it was so well done.
So how would staying in Afghanistan change anything?
If we'd stayed in Afghanistan and supported the Afghan military, in all likelihood, this war would have continued perhaps for another decade. But not only would Afghan society have sort of become completely acclimated towards not doing Taliban things, right? Okay, most Afghans aren't fans of the Taliban, but
they'd rather not die.
Yeah. It would have generated enough sentiment to where they would have preferred dying over working with the Taliban, which would have, I don't know, it would have been, it would have allowed Afghans to choose their own fate, and the one fate they probably wouldn't have chosen is a return to being dominated by the Taliban. Mm-hmm. Whatever they would have chosen is up to them, of course, but
so really what the threats that the United States looks at are ones that, you know, most people consider small threats. We're not looking at invasion forces.
They're perfectly possible. They're just not, they're not as dangerous as people as people believe, even though they are cool, as potentially cool as people think, right? But the terrorist networks and what have you are far more dangerous than people recognize, and they're really not being paid attention to enough.
Well, we're burnt out. It's been 20 years, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think so. Definitely a new strategy needs to come. The world cannot afford to ignore Afghanistan.
Yeah, we cannot afford to ignore Afghanistan. Definitely can't afford to ignore Yemen or Somalia, even though we are. I mean, we can probably afford to ignore the Sahel, but that would be a stupid idea.
I think personally whether the next invasion would happen is West Africa. Like if the U.S. had to invade a country, that's probably where we would probably go.
Yeah.
Probably avoid them.
But you said that there definitely is going to be an invasion of Taiwan in 2 years, according to you. So
I don't want to say definitely. I'd say it's, oh yeah, I think I forgot to say the rationale why. Because China's economy is crashing, right? Well, it's not crashing. Okay, well, it is crashing right now, but not like, it's moderately crashing right now. You can probably see the housing market's collapsing. If they don't think that they can outrun or outpace the U.S., economically speaking, which under current trends and metrics, it's just really impossible for them to do.
But I think we should be economically crippling them at the same time.
Yeah.
So it makes the war in Taiwan more likely, those actions, though.
Yes.
Okay.
It's also somewhat,
that's an interesting way to look at it.
Yeah. It's a bit depressing, but it's also like sort of unavoidable, right? Would you rather live in a global system dominated by the CCP's trampling on human rights? It's exporting its willingness to mass imprison people literally on a whim, not even like making a pretense. Okay, America's legal system is shitty as fuck, but at least
it's better than China's.
Exactly. The U.S. at least pretends to have rule of law, okay, instead of so, rule.
If the invasion of Ukraine, because people say like somehow Russia is going to collapse because they're going to fail in Ukraine. Let's pretend, pretend that Russia completely collapses because they fail in Ukraine. China comes out, they try to invade Taiwan, they fail, they completely collapse too. The two other world powers go down. Is global peace coming?
Potentially.
Okay, I mean, perfect. Potentially, oh yeah. Cut. Perfect.